I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hey, AfterBuzzers. Welcome to the Outlander After Show on AfterBuzz TV. This is Season 5, Episode 8, Famous Last Words, the quarantine edition, of course. I'm Adrienne Snow, and I have with me Rachel Ratner. Wait, what? Rachel Goodman. Sorry,
that's my pen name. Hey, everyone. I am Rachel Goodman, but you can also call me Rachel Ratner. That's my writing pen name. But I'm really happy to be here and talk about PTSD. I especially love how the writers have always historically shown characters on Outlander as experiencing PTSD.
Nice. And we also have with us Angel Taylor. Oh, I think you're still muted. One second, technical difficulties. There we go.
Sorry about that, guys. Ha! Gotcha. Okay, so I really did enjoy this episode. It was just really sad because I feel for all of the characters that are experiencing PTSD, and I've experienced that as well, so I kind of know what's going on, and so it kind of hits me in a certain type of way.
Yeah. Sorry, I have a cat. Lastly, we have with us Lee Broadway. Lee? All right. She should get with us momentarily. Sorry, might be having some technical difficulties tonight, but let's go ahead and there.
We're having a little technical moment. This is Lee Broadway, and I'm one of welcome everybody tonight who's watching. Shout out to Blacklanders especially. Hope you enjoyed the show. And we have a lot of interesting topics to focus on tonight. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, let's just go right into it then. We kind of did our first thoughts a little bit in that moment. Overall, I like this episode. It's a different format, which is nice to see. And a big focus on Roger and PTSD, or shell shock, as they called it back then. So let's just, before we touch on Ian and Roger and what they're going through, I just want to talk a little bit about that aesthetic of having the silent film and how we felt about that, and a little bit touch on Murtaugh, as well as Murtaugh and Jocasta mourning each other.
So one of the things for me it was Roger's reaction, Roger's mental state after this, after he was one attacked by his own family member. Well, not that they know that they're his family, but by his own blood. After the attack and after the hanging, his reaction to it reminded me of the way that Jamie reacted back after after his rape. And so it seemed to mirror that a lot. Jamie even mentions that at one point. But what I especially loved about the silent movie aspect is that Roger, as he's reliving these moments of what he went through, he, until he is able to fully process and allow himself, until his brain allows him to fully see what happens, that's why we see it as a silent movie, because it's just too much for him to process. And so to see it from his perspective, and to see it so authentically played out, because yeah, like Angel said, like I've also been through PTSD, and sometimes you just can't relive something until you're ready to see it again. And so to have them cinematically portray it, I thought it was very, the way that they handled it was very well done.
Nice. Angel?
So I thought it was interesting the perspective that they used when he saw himself as if someone was looking at him, instead of him having the perspective of inside of the sack that was over his head, which we did catch a glimpse of shots where he's looking through the sack and he can see the men talking. It was more or less the perspective of as if someone were looking at him, as the guy kicked the bucket, and as we see him put his hand in the way, and as we see just all the visuals of his entire body, it's almost as if he can see himself and how it played out. And I think that's even more traumatic to watch himself as if he had like an out-of-body experience, as if he wasn't even like, he wasn't internalizing what was happening at that moment. It was like it was happening to someone else.
And Lee? Lee?
Yes, I found it really, I found it fascinating that this is a man who's a singer, and it was kind of profound that, you know, he's losing his voice, not only to speak, but to sing, which is such a great love of his. And when Ian began to speak to him about what he saw while he was in that position, the hanging position, and Roger said, I saw my wife's face. You know, that love that he had for his wife brought him back to the place where he could express himself and be willing to speak again. And I was really just, my heart was just like pounding when I heard him utter some words. I saw my wife, and he found a reason to stay with us and not to leave. You know, that love, that bond we have was so powerful. And also, of course, that this is a man who loves music, and, you know, he lost his voice, and he was so traumatized that he had to have something to sort of,
Hello. Okay. Well, I know Lee will chime back in. Yeah. I think it just might be a little bit issue with the microphone. I really liked the usage of the silent film visual. I was also relieved that the entire episode wasn't in that visual, because I think that for such a traumatic episode, it would have been a lot. And I was a little bit nervous for like the first 5-10 minutes of the episode. I was like, please don't do this the entire
episode. Not the subtitles. Yes.
That would drive me crazy. So I was grateful that they did not. And they mainly used it kind of just as a way to acknowledge like how a visual of actual PTSD, because when people are actually going through those episodes, you don't know what they're seeing or how it feels. And so to kind of use that as a way to show when he's going into an episode was really nice to see. And before we go further into that, let's just talk briefly about Jocasta choosing to bury Murtaugh on her land and having it be an unmarked grave, because how can she honor him when he is, one, you know, a traitor, essentially, and not her husband? How do we all feel about that choice?
Well, I loved the fact that even though she couldn't publicly say that this was his grave, I could see it in her facial expression, how much she deeply cared for him, her action that she would bury him on her property. She, you know, obviously she's someone who's been through so much trauma that sometimes I feel like she doesn't quite, she won't quite directly address how she's feeling, or she won't, like, for example, that conversation she had with Jamie, she wasn't really able to say to him just how much Murtaugh meant to her, but you could see it and feel it in what she wasn't saying. And I appreciated that. And just the depth in her acting that we're getting and the depth of the character, in that clearly this is someone she's going to love forever, but it just, because of unfortunate circumstances, they weren't in the right place at the right time to be together.
Mm. Angel?
I felt really, really bad for Aunt Jocasta, because it was so much left unsaid and there was so much left undone between those two. It was like they were star-crossed lovers and they didn't get to explore that love the way that they should have. And he was taken away from them so soon. And the grief and the guilt that Jamie was feeling, I felt that. It was little beats of it throughout the episode. And I didn't know she could sing. So I'm like warming up to her personality through every episode.
And Lee?
I love that scene where she was singing over his gravestone. I think she was having thoughts about how...
Oh, no. okay. Well, Lee, if you're able to comments, just chime in, just you know, talk over me. Yeah, I really, it was nice to see that they honored him in some way, even though, you know, they can't do much, that he wasn't just kind of given to the British. And there we go. Okay. Huh?
I think I lost the connection, but I was just sharing back. I'm back. I'm never leaving. I think she was having, you know, regrets and thoughts about what could have been. You know, I think when you're in love and it's, you know, the unfinished business you have in a relationship. And she was probably wondering, you know, if she made the right choice by turning him away and maybe not, you know, allowing him into her life the way she wanted him at one time. But yeah, it was a little bit heartbreaking, but also a very tender moment. I enjoyed that scene a lot, and I loved just seeing that softer side of her as well, of Aunt Jocasta.
Yeah, it was nice overall, just to kind of have that honored, and that, you know, I'm sure that Murtaugh will make appearances in his own way, you know, not necessarily in life, but you know, his memory will live on throughout the rest of the show. But before we move on to the main topics, I just want to thank everyone for making us the ESPN of TV Talk. As always, please rate, subscribe, comment on YouTube, Twitter, wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, I don't know, MySpace, if you can figure that out. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, for being an audience, for hanging in the chat and all that jazz. And we know that you're there because we're all quarantined. So what else are you doing right now? Really, let's be real. Like, thank you so much for tuning in. And as always, it's wonderful to host for you guys and making us ESPN of TV Talk, which I already said. So let's go into Ian.
I was not expecting
that.
Mm-hmm. I was going to give a quick shout out to hubby Joe in the chat.
Okay.
He says, I was on the edge of my seat and feeling all the emotions that the characters were feeling.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. But I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Please chime in with the chat. Sorry, my cats are, they have the Zooms. So if you see me like look afraid briefly, that's what's happening. So Ian makes a comeback. And, you know, Angela, let's start with you. So how did you feel about Ian just kind of appearing? What? I guess it's been 2 years at this point because Jimmy looks like a giant.
Yeah, I didn't even recognize him. Like, he had to come all the way close and the camera had to just sit on his face for me to connect those dots, because he looks like a native true and true. I mean, I was like, wow. I was happy to see him. I did not like when he left. I knew it was him, like something told me it was him when I saw the dog. I was like, there's a dog that, like crossed in the frame, and I was like, okay, that is for sure
Rolo.
The Ian that left. Yeah, Rolo.
Yeah,
that's for sure Ian. So it was like a breath of fresh air. But the way he came into the scene and his disposition, it was off. And so I wasn't as relieved when I started to see how he was acting, and I was like, oh, he's going through PTSD too. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
So with me and Ian, the way that I'm viewing him, I did see a similarity between him and Roger, that obviously Ian has gone through something, and even now we've only gotten hints of it. What I noticed, though, is that he felt even more displaced than Roger. Now, obviously, Roger felt displaced too, but with Ian, it felt more like we were watching someone who has been ripped from their home and then transported somewhere else. Kind of like how when we saw Claire go back through the stones and go back into the future. Mm-hmm. And we saw her reaction and just being thrown off of where she was. That's how I felt. Those are the vibes I was getting from Ian, that he was suddenly no longer in his comfort zone because he had spent so much time with a different among a different culture. The people he had been with were his home. And so now here he was, and that it was just going to be super hard for him to assimilate back into another way of life that he was no longer used to.
Yeah. Lee? All right. As always, just go ahead and talk over me when you when you're able to get back in. It's all good. Yeah, I really liked the reintroduction of Ian. You can clearly tell that he's just grown a lot in, I guess, the year and a half, 2 years that he's been gone. And to have him come back, and immediately I knew it was he's lost someone. Like, that's the feeling I got. And also just that he had been living out with the natives all this time and had become accustomed to that life. And yeah. So for him to go back to a house and be in a bed and you know, just all the things that, you know, the Frasers take for essentially for granted or assume as normal, not to even say that one is better than the other, it's going to be hard for him. And to know that he's lost someone and may have lost the entire tribe from whatever has happened is something that he's also carrying with him. So my theory was that, because he said that she didn't die, that she was just gone, was that she went through the stones, because there is stones on the way to the land where the, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the name, Mohawk live. And so I assume that they may have had the power and she escaped through the stones and doesn't know how to get back, because maybe it was an accident or something like that. Because Ian also alluded to understanding some type of secret between Jamie and Claire, which made me think, oh, maybe he's discovered that Claire is a time traveler, if he didn't already know, which I don't think he did.
I don't think he knew either.
Yeah. And just that mirroring of having a new family and still having love for your old family with him and Marcelly, it was like, oh yeah, like Ian, I'm sure, still loves the Frasers and that's just his family, but at the same time, he's found this new family where he feels more at home. And that's okay too, to be happy for that new family and to be sad when they're gone.
I
just checking to see if she came back. Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to add on to that too. I also thought, one, Ian might have either been a I don't think he is a father. I think that maybe the woman that he was with might have been pregnant. That was the sense I got from the conversations that I was hearing with him. The other thing is that when he said at the dinner table, the Mohawks were really good people, it made me think past tense, like maybe they hit the people that he had been with, something had happened to them. And that was why, like you had said, maybe the woman that he loved, who's now lost to him, did have to go through the stones. So that I just felt like that was what was happening. And it's funny too, not funny, but it with Jamie, I mean, I remember when Claire left and after Jamie survived the Battle of Culloden, the way that Jamie would not talk, Jamie was like, he was a dead person, basically a dead man walking. And that's really what I think we're seeing with Ian and Roger right now. And this whole idea of the hanged man who in those tarot cards, I know we're going to get there, but like the tarot cards and how a hanged man is somebody who, you know, essentially they are now no longer who they used to be, but they have to be the person who's responsible for their change and for their journey back to life again.
Ian clearly went through a... Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Ian clearly went through a transformation, and you can see it in his eyes that he had... I felt like he had some deep, dark secrets that he wanted to share, but just didn't feel comfortable opening up at this point. He clearly went through a metamorphosis. You know, it was in his eyes and his body language. He wanted to enter back in to the Frasier family. He had love for them, but he seemed to have another loyalty to the Mohawk Nation, and he seemed a bit divided. I liked how he was interacting with Roger and how, you know, he was used in that scene to sort of bring Roger out of that depression and that fear of speaking again. He was a catalyst to help Roger heal, and I love that scene where, you know, where he was asking him, what did you see when you were hanging? And I think there's a lot more backstory to his life outside of the camp, outside of the Frasier family. And I'd like to hear more about those experiences and how that shaped his life and how he's become the man and the individual he's become and transformed into over the, you know, last couple of years.
I want to give another shout out to the chat. We've got Amy A in here, who says that they were actually in the chat for an hour last night. So I'm really sorry about that. And then, yeah. And then also she's glad that Ian's back. Roger's getting on her nerves. And that also it's tough not to give certain things away with Ian because she's read the books. And I'm really excited because I haven't read book six. I have read most of book five now through what we're seeing with Roger. So I can't wait to talk about that in our segment.
Yeah.
So I think that Ian, like, I think a little bit of his backstory has to do with him loving someone that he wasn't supposed to within the Mohawk tribe that was maybe promised to someone else. And she's lost, meaning she had to be with that person. Otherwise, she probably would have been threatened. He would have been threatened. He had to go because he probably violated, you know, one of those, you know, traditions. Because they're different, obviously, traditionally. And I just think that he just had to go because of falling in love with someone that made him a star-crossed lover.
Which I think is definitely possible because last season, I mean, one, we did see Ian, he became accepted with the Mohawks because he was able to pass that physical test. So we saw that if it was a man who was very like the priest, like there were just certain complications with the priest's religion that prevented the union when we saw that couple. So I don't know if it was something like that or just that generally they wouldn't accept Ian into this union.
Yeah. It's certainly a possibility. And I am excited to see what we're going to have with Ian and his story and what he's been through for this all this time that we haven't been with him. So I'll be happy to have that explored. But let's go ahead into the main part of the episode, which is Roger and his PTSD and him surviving being hanged. Yeah, Rachel.
I have so many thoughts on this. So one, episode 7 and 8, I said last week that 7 was my favorite. I think that 7 and 8 of season 5 are definitely my two favorite episodes. One of my favorite of the whole show in general, but definitely this season. What I loved about the PTSD is that it was, to me, very realistic. Roger was essentially dead. His spirit was dead, really. And the fact that they would have tarot cards, and I'll talk more about it when I get to the book segment because Brianna actually explains a lot of the meaning behind that card that he pulls, but twice, or the card that Marcelly pulls twice, really. It's different in the book.
So he pulled it more than twice.
Yeah, but the whole thing is that it's, you know, crazy. It was so accurate with how they showed what he was going through. I loved the fact that, you know, kind of tying back to this in the beginning of the episode with Roger using his voice and that they were talking about famous last words. And that was the whole thing that tracked through the episode, famous last words. And this idea that it doesn't have to be, sometimes it's not words that are the last thing that people, that you personally will see. Sometimes it's more of a glimpse or a feeling. And I love that it all tied back to his connection to Brianna and his family.
Lee?
Yes, and sometimes it isn't. What people remember is what you make them feel and what you feel for that other person. So yes, it isn't always what we say, it's what we, the things we remember, you know, the love, the kindness, the things, the emotions and the care that we showed to other people is what people remember, not what we say in the end.
I think Roger was really ticking me off a little bit during this episode because he's just really stubborn and he's like a mule. So that part where Bree was singing his song, right? This is his song, Clementine, right?
Yeah.
That would have been the point where if you are ever going to speak in life, you should have chimed right in with baby girl and sung to your son. But no, he looked like he wanted to sing so bad he was going to burst from the inside out, but he still chose not to. And he has just so much pride and so much ego. And I felt so much of that. It was stifling to watch. And I was just kind of disgusted by, like, why won't you try? Like, why won't you open up your airways and let something out? Like, what's the problem? What's stopping you? And I really felt like if anybody could have made him talk, why was it Ian? Why wasn't it Bree? If that's the person you saw when you were about to cross over to the other world, like, why was her presence not strong enough for you to try for her? Yeah. But as soon as Ian called you on your bullshit, that's when you want to talk. That's why I say it's all an ego thing with Roger. Like, none of that made sense if everything was for love anyway. And that's what makes somebody do this or do that or feel this or feel that. Or so strong that that's who you see when you cross over. She can't even make you talk.
So I think... I think the main reason that he felt compelled to speak with Ian is probably because of, like, a mainly shared trauma. And not mm-hmm. to say that Brianna doesn't have trauma, but, you know, she's further down the line in the PTSD train. So she just is, you know, she's a little bit more recovered from it. And whereas Ian is clearly maybe not going through PTSD specifically, but going through through some type of trauma. Mm-hmm. And as much as I do think Roger is a bit egocentric, I didn't necessarily feel that he was exhibiting that in this particular episode. I think it was partly PTSD. I think it was partly reconciling with the fact that he's not going to be that man anymore, that when he speaks, he's not going to hear the sound that he's used to hearing. And even though his voice will recover and did recover, it takes time to adjust and acknowledge that. And I think that's kind of what he says in that final monologue with Brianna, you know. Rachel, what were you going to say?
So the way that Richard Rankin played it, I agree that Roger, the way that the show portrays him, Roger definitely does have moments where he has a lot of pride. He has ego, like his ego can just, you know, really mess things up. The way that Richard Rankin played this though in the episode, I didn't take it like it was his ego making him, well, okay, yeah, our egos make us do everything, but I didn't think that it was about his voice per se. I thought it was more about the attack and mm-hmm. and how that mentally affected his psyche and how that affected everything he did. I mean, obviously, like, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, he could not live a normal life anymore, at least not at this point in his recovery process, because everything he did was triggering those memories of what happened to him. And that's what I think it was about. Mm-hmm. I really don't think that he's that egotistical that he was like, oh, my voice, I'll never sing the same way again. Let me not talk to people. I don't mm-hmm. think it was that. I think that, sure, that probably played into some of it, but I think that really what it was is what he had actually gone through, the attack, being punched, mm-hmm. being beaten to a pulp before being hanged. I think that is really what triggered all of this. And the fact that, yeah, like he no longer is the same person. And I think he recognized that. And I think that he was at a place where he probably felt that he would rather be dead than have survived. And I think yeah. what he felt like was, oh, well, I survived this. I shouldn't have survived. And now I'm dead, but everyone else around me is alive. And I think that the reason why he opened up to Ian is because Ian had this quality of also a part of him being dead too. And I think that Roger could see this. And so it made it easier for the old Roger that we know to kind of come through a little bit and show, you know, we saw him smiling again. We saw Roger interacting a little bit more. And I think it's because of that shared trauma.
Lee, any thoughts? All right. Well, any final thoughts on, I know there was a lot to cover with Roger, but I think we're also just a little bit close on time and I want to make sure we get our special segment in. So any final thoughts on Roger and his whole, no? All right. Well, let's go into the special segment. So, which is the page to screen.
Yes, I am I'm so excited to talk about this. So So I've been reading The Fiery Cross as we've been watching the episodes, I'm trying to finish right where we leave off, but sometimes it's hard because of the way that things have been, you know, reordered or changed a little. Mm-hmm. The major thing, so first of all, you actually, the way that they had it in the show, you don't really see what happens until they find him. In the book, you actually experience the hanging with Roger, and he literally, like, it's so descriptive, it's beautiful. This writing in this book is amazing. If anyone listening to this, if you haven't read the books, you should read them. They are brilliant. But you literally witness, to me, it felt like someone was dying. And so from that perspective, I could see what ends up happening to him and that he thinks he's dead, because literally it is like experiencing someone passing away in that moment where he's being hanged. The other major thing is that in the book, Roger is not as angsty. All of this happens, like a lot of the scenes that we saw, like for example, with Jemmy almost touching the boiling coffee pot, Roger does shout, stop. That all happens, but it happens actually within, it's like a 2-week period, not 3 months. Roger in the book, it's actually harder for him to speak. Like in the show, Claire made it a point that he was physically back to normal, that he should, like, obviously he was going to have problems speaking, but she made it a point, oh, he's like 100% physically back to normal. He should be able to talk. In the books, this is closer to when it happened. So he had more problems physically speaking, but he was also more willing to talk to everyone. Like he was writing down his story about what happened because he couldn't speak the words. He did start to talk, pretty quickly. It didn't have to do with Ian. Ian comes back later. Up to where I've read, Ian has not come back yet. The only other thing I want to mention, I mean, there's a lot, but Jamie, actually, the reason why he has a falling out with Tryon is obviously not because of Murtaugh, because Murtaugh has already passed in the books. Jamie has a fallout with Tryon because of what Tryon did to Roger. Even though they play off like, oh, we didn't know, it was a trick, like the same way they do in the show. But that's why Jamie has such a fallout. And Jamie's actually going to go and try to kill the man who attacked Roger until he finds out that it's William McKenzie. And that then he's like, okay, I need to handle this differently. So yeah. And then the tarot cards, just the last thing I want to mention for time. The tarot cards did not actually happen with Marcelly. It happened in Brianna's dream. She dreams about her friend Deb, who is explaining tarot, even though Brianna doesn't want to do it. Her friend is explaining it to her and basically says, here's the Hanged Man card, and here's what it represents. And her friend, in this dream that Brianna has, which happens a lot, she has a lot of dreams in the book. The dream is basically her friend saying, yeah, the card represents sacrifice, self-surrender, leading to a personality shift, but the person has to accomplish their own regeneration. So nice. Those are like the major.
Cool. Well, that's Page to Screen. Thank you so much, Rachel. Let's just go ahead into like very quick, like 15-second predictions. We'll start with Angel.
My prediction is that Ian will open up to everyone and they'll start to understand, and possibly Ian will go back to get the love of his life, whoever she may be. And I think that Roger will eventually go back to normal. He'll still have little flashbacks, but the same way Bree does, it'll be, you know, here and there, more sporadic.
Hey, Rachel?
So I'm going to predict that Roger is going to, he's still going to have moments where the trauma kind of creeps back up. I think that he will eventually get better. But there are some things that happen in the book that are different that I think we might see. So I'm not going to say that for spoilers, but I think that there's still more to come in terms of his trauma, and that he's still kind of going to be a little bit lost for a while. I'm really excited that Ian's back. I think Ian is going to start opening up more, especially because Ian does have Roger and they have this shared connection because of what they're going through at the same time. And then I think Jamie and Claire, I think that we're going to, with Stephen Bonnet, I think he's going to come back for this last arc, and that they're going to finalize that part of what's been going on with him.
All right. I think that, I think that Roger is, you know, I don't know, guys. It's a lot. A lot is going to happen. We have like, what, 4 more episodes? I think that Roger's probably going to, yeah, definitely bond with Ian over just that shared trauma. That will definitely have probably an episode dedicated to Ian and his time with the Mohawk, as well as the face-off with Steve and Bonnet, which I think might end up being very dramatic. Katrina Balfe, who plays Claire, has mentioned that some stuff is about to go down, just so you know. So we have a bunch of stuff to cover, I think, in the last 4 to 5 episodes of this season. Let's just go ahead and say our wrap-ups. I'm Adrienne Snow. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Adrienne Snow. Rachel?
I am Rachel Goodman. You can find me on Twitter at Rach Goodman or on my author Instagram account at Rachel Radner Author. And you can also find my books on Amazon under Rachel Radner.
And Angel?
Hey guys, you can find me on all social media platforms under Angel Taylor _. And you can, oh, never mind, that show just ended.
And I'm Adrienne Snow. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. Did I already say that? You can follow Lee on, God, sorry. I'm trying to figure out, find her information very quickly because usually I don't have it. I believe it's at Lee Broadway on Twitter. And then 50 Plus and Fabulous is her company as well. And she does do the Blacklanders for, is it a podcast, y'all? I'm sorry. I had to do this off the top of my head.
I think that they're a group on Twitter.
Yes. So you can follow up with that as well. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Sorry for the technical difficulties. Sorry for the day late. We, you know, life happens. So, but thank you for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.